Jay Pizzy, Mosier on the beat. Look at my team, ay. Look at the ring, whoa. See what I mean, ay. You see what I mean? Look at my team, look at the ring, everything. This is a dream, all but a dream. This ain't a dream, I am a fiend for the cream, go. DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
DTC and I beat these teams and it make me feel alright.
Alright.
See, I calculate. Yeah, y'all just palpitate. Whoa, if you don't calculate, get it? Get it? Calculate. Lady Justice is illustrious. I just love this. I can put this in this function and it turns up into something. And that something came from nothing. And I sold it for a button. Now I got this lovely lump sum. Guess I'll burn these bumps like buzzing, bro.
Welcome to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast, a show dedicated to Dynasty Fantasy Football trades and player values, with your hosts, John Paul Hurley, Izzy Elkafas, and Nick Whalen.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Trade Calculator Podcast. Welcome back to the show, you guys. We got some cool content this week. Joining me this week, my co-host, Izzy, the Pharaoh Fantasy, Elkafas. What's up, man?
What up, what up, what up?
Had a sweet week, dude. I went to the Vikings game yesterday. It was the first time the Minnesota Vikings have ever beat Russell Wilson's Seahawks ever. Yeah, can you believe that? And somehow the Vegas line was set to favor the Vikings. I don't get it.
They're at home.
Yeah, they're at home. They were competitive. They should be 3-0. They lost the Dalvin Cook fumble in overtime in week one. They missed a chip shot kick at the end of the game, end of regulation in week two.
Yep.
And it was a convincing victory yesterday. It was super fun. I was just saying that I was talking to Nick Whalen in DMs. By the way, Nick Whalen cannot join us this week. I was talking to him in DMs and I was saying how cool it was to be able to have a field view of a game for once instead of watching, you know, grinding out red zone or watching on TV and only seeing, you know, very small cuts of the field. It was really cool. Like, you could almost anticipate every single play. I was whispering to my wife, I was saying, this is going to be Adam Thielen. He's got single coverage on the outside. 3rd and 4, and it was an Adam Thielen touch. It was beautiful. She actually recorded that one. It's on Facebook right now.
Oh, really?
Look at you. Can check it out.
I have to check it out.
Pretty cool. Like I said, pretty cool content this week. I'm your host, John Paul Hurley. Find us all on Twitter. I am at FF Hercules. Izzy can be found at DTC_IzzyE. Our producer, John Mosier, hasn't had a shout out in a little while. I'm gonna put him to work in this episode, I think. I'm going to have some cool... Oh, he's shaking his head. No, nothing cool. We're going to be chalk. It's going to be a chalk week.
He likes chalk.
You can still follow him on Twitter, though, even if it's a chalk week, at DTC_John Mosier, Mosier. The main handle, at FF Dynasty Trades. Check it out. Thank you, guys. That's the podcast. I like that.
Bye.
Just all intro, nothing else.
Yeah.
I love it. This is the easiest one I've ever done. This week, we're going to cover the top 12 most entered player in the calculator in the last 24 hours, just to kind of get a feel for who is trading what kind of values are out there for those guys. We're going to kind of pick and choose which ones we want to talk about, because we've covered many of them in previous episodes. And we also got a little bit of like a dynasty advice section to cover towards the end. I want to get Izzy's feedback on an angle I want to play. So we're going to do that.
Okay.
Let's rip through this,
because I also have something I want to talk to you about.
I love it. Let's rip it. Is it going to be like an intervention? Have I done something wrong?
We just need to talk.
Okay. Did my wife pay you?
We just need to talk. We'll get there.
Oh, boy. I don't like the sound of that. Whenever somebody say we need to talk, it's always bad news.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. That's how I've been broken up to so many times of that.
With that we need to talk?
Yeah. And it's usually text message.
Yeah. It's never like, hey, we need to talk. And then it's like, I want to give you a promotion and a raise.
I might do that from now on. I might actually follow that with good news, just to kind of like flip the script, because that's always such a bad, it's got such a negative connotation.
Yeah, I agree. We should.
I agree. Well, so the most entered players in the calculator in the last 24 hours, the people that owners are wondering what their values are because they're probably considering trades for them or considering trading them away. Starting with the 12th most entered player, and we're going to kind of group a couple together. This is the 12th.
We're only doing 7.
I've got the top 12, but we are doing 7 players, yeah. I'm just saying, I'm going to list them off. We don't have to cover them, but I want people to know who has been entered.
Okay.
Okay, the 12th most entered player in the calculator is Trey Sermon, with good reason, too. Trey Sermon has burst onto the scene. with every single 49ers running back. No, I'm just joking. It was supposed to be sarcastic.
I think Burst is probably over exaggerating a little bit.
Trey Sermon has concussed onto the scene. What adjective would you use to describe Trey Sermon's emergence?
Has lumbered.
Trey Sermon has lumbered onto the scene, stepped out from the shadows of the 49ers' injured backfield, injury-riddled backfield, to take the lion's share of the work. Trey Sermon. Izzy, what do you think about that? People are wondering what the values are, so maybe give him a little bit of help.
Yeah. Did you have a chance to watch any of that game?
I watched some of the game, yes.
Okay. He does not look good. Or he did not look good. I think it's the first time I can remember ever watching, besides Tevin Coleman, a San Francisco 49ers running back not look good in that offense. I'd say Tevin and him are the only two. We can name six or seven other backs that have just whenever they're in, they produce. I'm completely off of the Trey Sermon. I guess I've never really been on. I don't have him anywhere. But
so would you say you're off of the train?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sticking around to listen to the sermon.
Oh, I love that too. That's an easy one. That's low hanging fruit.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I really feel that if you can find somebody that's just going to look at fantasy points and see that he scored double digits and he was a starting running back and he kind of still had that allure, I would be looking to shop Trey Sermon, because I really feel that between the two players, actually between everybody we've seen in that backfield, he is by far the worst one. And I get it. We have a small sample size. It's only been 1 week. But he's just not the typical running back that succeeds in that offense. He doesn't have the speed that some of these other guys that have been successful have. And it didn't look like he was breaking many nothing stood out for Trey Sermon. He missed a couple short runs that they needed. Kyle Shanahan actually said in the post game that they didn't run it on fourth and one because they were worried that, basically insinuating that Trey Sermon wasn't going to get the 1 yard. They were worried about it because he didn't get the third down, or he lost yards on the third down prior. So it's just not something you want to hear out of your coach. So I'm saying you get rid of Sermon, you move on, and you find the next.
Yeah, what are you hoping to get?
That's a great question. I would try trading a Sermon. See if you can get Elijah Mitchell plus for Sermon. So we had talked about this weeks ago, that just try to find the cheapest of the running backs in San Francisco. And right now, from the running backs that are actually hasty, you're looking at, I guess not even, I would say between Sermon and Mitchell, the two guys that will probably get the most burn, assuming that Trey Sermon is better than what he showed this last week, I would try to maybe do a Mitchell and a second for Trey and a third, and just try to upgrade the picks there and maybe steal a potential starting back in San Francisco versus what some people may presume is the starting back in Trey Sermon.
Yeah.
Thoughts? THOTS?
I don't know if I'm as negative as you on Trey Sermon. Like, the limited action that I watched, because he didn't have a ton of touches, but when I did watch him, like, the first half was really bad. Second half, it seemed like he was starting to get better. But, like, do you give a guy an opportunity to turn it around? You know, that's the question.
Yeah. Yeah. But the problem with San Fran is I feel like we've always been in this carousel. If you're not exceptional, I feel like you're going to get left behind in a sense,
yeah,
because they have so many running backs that can come in. And the biggest thing with this, Hurley, is that there was red flags from the fact that he got beat out by Elijah Mitchell, who was drafted like four rounds after he was.
Yeah, but Ayuk was also on the bench. So, like,
yeah,
who knows what the hell is going on?
Yeah, sure. But with Ayuk, we know that he was in the doghouse. With Trey Sermon, I don't know what the story is. Like, I haven't heard much about it. It just sounded like he was just outplayed by Elijah Mitchell. And when you watch them perform on the field, it looks like Mitchell is definitely the better running back. And of course, it's young, it's early in their career, but he was inactive, and they activated Hasty instead of him. So there are some definite red flags with Trey Sermon before the lackluster week three. So if you want, if you're a Trace Urban guy, there's nothing wrong with gambling one other week. I don't think he'll completely lose his value and maybe he can pop off, but I'd rather just cash out.
Yeah. So that's Trey Sermon. The next one, the 11th most entered player. And by the way, we are literally covering like five or six of these. So I'm not covering 12. Don't turn the podcast off. The 11th most entered player in the calculator in the last 24 hours, Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. And another one that we're going to kind of lump in here is Allen Robinson, who's sixth on the list.
Yep.
So, and why we're kind of lumping it together, they're both 28-year-old wide receivers. That were kind of, so here's what's interesting. This is kind of the gamble you make. And we're going to talk about two other players that are kind of in the same pocket too. The problem with these, having aging vets is great if you're trying to compete. So you look at Allen Robinson, you know, hey, he's an aging vet. You know, his value is pretty low, but I'm trying to compete. And even though his value is going to decline over time, I still have Allen Robinson. Well, the problem with that is that you're getting Allen Robinson in his current production, which is nothing. So now what you're doing is you're plugging in Allen Robinson every single week for the last 3 weeks, who's gotten you wide receiver four production, and he's plummeting in value. His insulation is decreasing significantly. And at this point, I think his value is only high. It's still relevant because people are still hanging on to him because they don't want to take the loss so early. So they're just denying that what is happening right now might be what's going to happen for the next 14 weeks of the season. And there will be a breaking point at some point with A-Rob, and I'm guessing it might be another week. I would be shocked if his value retained as a first-round player, you know, a mid-first-round player by this time next week if he puts up another horrible performance.
And maybe less about Robinson and more about the offense, I think you're saying, right?
Yeah. I don't think it's... Obviously, Robinson's a good receiver, but it is definitely the offense. I don't see the offense getting any better. But I mean, I can't see it getting worse. So it will get better, just how much... I don't know if it's enough to really catapult him into, you know, a guy that you're starting every week with the utmost of confidence. Kupp, on the other hand, they've almost flipped where Allen Robinson, where his Kupp was, and now Kupp is where Allen Robinson was at the beginning of the season. And he's a player that he's kind of a ticking time bomb in a sense, because although there's clearly a chemistry there with Stafford, Kupp has had a really difficult time staying healthy in his career. So I look at the situation and I look at Kupp, and he's catapulted so much, and I get it. You're likely sitting 2-1, 3-0 if you have Kupp. That's kind of the thing right now. So he's got 367 yards and 5 touchdowns on 25 receptions. Just massive production.
Yeah, that's true.
The problem is...
Go ahead.
No. I was going to say the problem with this is that we always talk about pace. And we usually do it week 4, right? We usually kind of do our quarter. Temperature check on these players. So we still have some time here, another week, to see what Kupp does. But he goes up against Arizona. It's probably going to be a shootout. He's probably going to put up another big season. So the question is, when you think about, okay, what could Kupp put up realistically for the season? So let me ask you, Hurley, what, and if you're sitting listening to this, think about this realistically. What is a realistic projection for Kupp the rest of the season in terms of his end of season output? What would you put his numbers at?
Realistic, I would say 1,500 double-digit touchdowns, triple-digit receptions.
Okay. So basically how we have to look at it now is he only has about 1,100 yards remaining on his season, if that's your number. And I think 1,500 is probably a pretty good number. You can say 1,600 with the extra game, totally fine. But you're talking about an absolutely massive season out of Kupp. And he's never had a quarterback like Stafford. I think we can both agree there. But at the same time, it's hard imagining Kupp putting up more than 1,600 yards. And even if he hits that 1,500 or 1,600, 1,100 is pretty solid. But you're not going to be able to get in return what you could probably get right now if he starts to kind of put up solid but not spectacular numbers. So, and we do know his cup seasons past is he's played, what is this, 8 games when he started actually becoming relevant. He played 8 games, 14 games, and 12 games. So there is some durability there, durability issues. So for me with Cup, I think you can ride him out a few more weeks because he does have some juicy matchups coming up. Arizona, Seattle, Giants. I would honestly look after week 6, assuming he stays healthy, I would look to then move on from Cup and try to acquire some players that may be struggling, some young assets that you could see turning it around in the second half. Jerry Jeudy might be a really good one where you could probably get, you could probably trade Cup for Jeudy right now, depending on the team that has Jeudy and what direction they're going. But by week 5 or 6, you might be able to get Jeudy plus something pretty solid.
Yeah.
For Cooper Cup. And I really like that vision.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's a relatively comparable player to him currently. Like, Judy's down a little bit because of his injury. And, you know, obviously production's probably built into value a little bit. But I agree with you. I think that's a good pivot. Judy's value is still a little bit down because of his injury and production's kind of built into the calculator. But I like the pivot. And this is just a feeling that I have. I have to go back and check the stats. But Cooper Kupp historically has had really hot streaks. And I understand that it was with, you know, different quarterback play, and this could be more sustainable with Stafford. But I just wonder if he's stringing together one of these hot streaks, and you know, he's always been kind of banged up, and then he disappears for a while again. You know, he always has these big, huge hot streaks where he looks like the wide receiver one in the whole league. So I wonder if it might be a good time to consider doing that. Although I know people that are contending, they like these points and they want to win.
I want to win. Yes, I totally get that. But let me tell you this. I would be more than happy if you're still trying to compete. Do a Thielen plus for Cup. You're still going to get the production for this season, if that's your angle. You're getting an older player, which is going to depreciate in value just like Cup will next year. Cup's going to be 29 in the summer. So you're going to get Thielen plus something good because there's a significant gap in value, even though production, yes, right now is Cup significantly, but you could argue over the next, you know, 14 weeks that they might be pretty close in production.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the angle that I would take it. If you want somebody younger that's going to get high volume, Deontay is another guy. You know, he's just a volume guy. He's going to get a lot of volume with Big Ben in there. So I get it. He's got durability issues, but you're resetting the clock on age. And you can probably get Deontay plus for Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of little angles you can take here. But I think you're kind of getting a gift of Cup kind of breaking out and having just a monster start that you can try to, you know, sell at the peak right now. Because he has to continue to put this up. His value really can't exceed what it currently is right now. Like, no matter how well he plays because of his age. So
yeah,
you're really only taking a risk of it decreasing in value, and you're just hoping that he continues this monster production. So I do like the Thielen angle a lot if you want to match the production, somebody that's durable. And if you want to take a risk with durability issues and go Deontay, I like that angle if you want somebody younger.
There you go. I think that's pretty good for Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson. The next pair of players, by the way, that was Cooper Kupp was the 11th most entered player in the calculator. The 10th and 9th most entered players were Rondale Moore and Joe Mixon, who we've talked about in previous episodes. We don't need to delve into them, Delvin Cook.
Mm.
The 8th and 7th most entered players in the calculator is Jonathan Taylor and DeAndre Swift. What a pair. Why are people wondering about their value right now?
Yeah. So this is really interesting. Preseason, and I was one of these people, I was deathly afraid of DeAndre Swift because I was concerned about Anthony Lynn and how he's going to utilize DeAndre Swift in the offense. And to be honest with you, I'm really liking the guys that are going to be utilized. I don't want to say Alvin Kamara because I think that's the easy player for people to kind of point to for the guys that are catching more passes than rushes. But the way I look at it with Swift is he has had issues staying healthy. And he's got 23 targets through three games. So he's averaging, call it, 8 targets a game and 11 carries a game, which is in the pocket of Kamara. It's in the pocket of the Eckler usage. And honestly, if I can get a 22-year-old running back with that type of usage, I think it's good for his durability and it's fantastic for his fantasy points. His floor increases so high. Now, his ceiling might be limited on a week-to-week basis if he's not getting enough carries, right? If he's not getting those 15, he's not getting Christian McCaffrey workload. If he's not getting that, his ceiling is capped a little bit. But if I can get that high floor, if I'm getting double-digit points as a floor just off of receptions, I think he's averaging 11 or 12 fantasy points just off of receptions. And if you take away his rushing, he would still be RB13 without any carries whatsoever.
Wow.
I love that, right? That's exactly what you want. And you could argue right now, and this is going to be part of the exercise later, that it's hard to find a running back that you would want in their current usage and how they're being utilized from a youth perspective than DeAndre Swift. You could point to, we talked about it, Najee Harris, maybe Saquon Barkley when he's fully, you know, integrated into the offense. I mean, Saquon did have kind of a resurgence in value or production. So you could look at that. But what other young guys are getting this type of quality production on a week-to-week basis? Maybe you can point to Antonio Gibson, but he had a one big long run this past week that really kind of changed his outlook. But Swift, Barkley, Najee Harris, who else is getting this type of high floor production from a youth perspective?
Mixon, but not young enough to fit in that category. Yeah, there it's few and far in between.
All right, so here are the top 10 running backs in full PPR. Derrick Henry 1, Aaron Jones 2, DeAndre Swift 3, McCaffrey 4, Eckler 5. So these are your top 5, and every single one of those running backs is at the 25 or older. Then you have Najee, Kareem Hunt, Chubb, Jamal Williams, Alvin Kamara, all 25 years or older. Then you have Melvin Gordon, Chris Carson at 11 and 12, all 20, both 25. So when you're talking about your top 12 running backs, only one of them is under the age of 25.
Wow.
So when you look at the next closest youth player is James Robinson at 14. You have Antonio Gibson at 16, David Montgomery at 18, Saquon Barkley at 21. Jonathan Taylor squeezes in as RB24. Zach Moss is RB22, and he didn't even play week one. So massive gap in production from the top, really essentially the top five players, or top, you can say top 10 players, and everybody else.
Yeah.
So I look at this and say, it's hard for me right now to find a young running back that you would want more than DeAndre Swift. And honestly, I am totally fine. I don't want him getting the 20 carries because I feel like if he's getting even 15, if he's getting over 15 and he's getting 8 targets a game, I don't know if his durability is enough to sustain him for 17 weeks. So I like the usage. I mean, there's a big reason. You look, Hurley, Alvin Kamara has stayed healthy most of his career. And Christian McCaffrey was pretty healthy most of his career until he started getting these massive week-to-week workloads.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no issue with it. I'm good. DeAndre Swift.
So you like Swift ahead of Najee?
Yeah. I'd say so only because with Najee, that offense, Detroit's offensive line is really good. Detroit's, and this is because I think when the Steelers have a full lineup of receivers, like we saw Najee just eat up a bunch of targets because Juju got hurt and Deontay was out. So with Deontay out, that's a lot of short targets that Big Ben is missing, right? He doesn't have a player for that. And then when Juju went out, I think Najee had like 9 of his 13 or 14 receptions were when Juju went down, and that was late in the game. So he just got peppered with little targets over and over and over again. So I feel like what we saw out of Najee Harris is kind of fool's gold. I mean, it is fool's gold. He's not going to get that many receptions in a game. But I hate the fact that Najee just keeps getting carries behind this bad offensive line.
Yeah, it's bad. But I mean, I do like the trajectory that he's on. He's I was looking at pretty standard scoring here, but 5.9 fantasy points, 19.1 fantasy points, and then 28.2, kind of a breakout game.
He had 19 targets.
I know there's buts, but like so last week in week two, when all those guys were healthy, he got 5 targets, 5 receptions, and a 43 receiving yards and a touchdown.
Sure.
His usage in the passing game was already pointing upwards before this happened. Did you get the splits exactly like what he had for targets in the first 3 quarters? Because I think we're kind of guessing.
No, you and I were talking about it, though. And at the time, yeah. I think before Juju got hurt, he was at 5. And it might be 5 to 7. So it's in that pocket. But, dude,
I got to know. That's all the importance for me right now. So I'm looking through the play-by-play, and Najee Harris actually had 11 targets in the first half. I think 8 of them were before Juju was hurt. So you said, we mentioned before we stopped recording that Juju was hurt with 4 minutes remaining in the second quarter, right?
Yeah, so he missed the second half. Yeah, basically missed most of the second half in part.
Yeah.
All of the second half and very end of the first.
So pretty good usage, right? Even while Juju was on the field.
But listen to this fourth quarter, okay? With 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, when they were down 24-10, 5 minutes left, Roethlisberger to Najee for 5 yards, Roethlisberger to Claypool for 29, Roethlisberger for Najee for 9, Roethlisberger to Najee for 3, Roethlisberger to Najee for 1, Roethlisberger to Najee for 8, Roethlisberger incomplete to Najee, Roethlisberger incomplete to Najee. And that's with 5 minutes left. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
7 targets, 5 receptions.
6, 7. 7 targets in the last 5 minutes of the game and 5 receptions.
Yeah, but even without those, he still would have had 12 targets, which is astronomical for a running back.
So Najee has 1 target before Juju gets hurt with late in the second quarter.
And then 18 after Juju goes down.
And wow. 11 of those targets came in the fourth quarter. So if we're talking about sustainability between Swift and Najee Harris, I just can't imagine Najee sustaining that sort of production on a week-to-week basis. Like I said, if Deontay and Juju are out, he's absolutely going to eat in terms of targets.
So Najee going to sustain that pace, right? Yes.
Najee, I like that. A good pull. I wish we could watch Office Space. Great movie. So I look at this and say, if you look at Najee's week 3 production and you're like, wow, he's going to be integrated in this, figuring out how to use it. This is probably just a complete anomaly with how things played out with injuries. Now, if Deontay doesn't play next week and Juju doesn't play next week, you're probably going to guarantee double-digit targets for Najee Harris next week.
40 targets.
40. Let's go 40. Now, this is an opportunity for you, once again, find a GM that will look at the box score and think like, okay, it's it. Because the fact that it took him 19 targets to get 28 points, the inefficiency in that is absolutely insane.
It's like Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, it is like Deontay Johnson. But the thing is with Deontay Johnson is he gets it every single week. And you can guarantee that he's going to get 10 targets every single week.
Yeah, that's
I think
true.
He's had like 15 weeks in a row where if he's played a full game, he's at 10 plus targets.
Yeah, that's wild.
So when you ask Swift versus Najee, I just look at it and be like, yeah, Najee gets the volume, but he's not getting the efficiency with everything. And it's not consistent. Right. Like, if you tell me Najee's going to get 10 to 12 targets a game, or 10, even 10 targets a game, I'm in. I love it.
Yeah.
Because I know he's going to get the work on the ground too.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah, you're right, man. If Deontay and Juju are out next week, Najee Harris is going to have more receptions and targets next week than Derrick Henry's had in his entire career.
It might be.
Maybe I'll be more safe and say Alfred Morris.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Alfred Morris. It's probably a pretty good one.
That could actually be real. That's hilarious. 19 targets is wild to me. But yeah, you're right.
It's massive.
It's very situational. So that's Najee Harris. I agree. So you're slightly on the Swift train over Najee because Najee's production isn't as sustainable as we'd like, but maybe we'll see.
Yeah, I'm just questioning the usage. Yeah. And I'm not giving him credit with the receptions and the targets with Juju and Deontay out.
Now the next most entered players in the calculator at 6 and 5 were Allen Robinson, which we already covered, and then Javonte Williams. And I think we're going to hold off on talking about Javonte.
Yep.
The next pair of guys we're going to talk about are Brandon Ayuk at 4 and Mike Williams, the number one most entered player in the calculator database in the last 24 hours. Mike Williams is at a torrid pace right now? Like, he's just busting out. He's busting nuts all over the place. By the way, AJ Brown, number 3, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, number 2, not going to talk about.
Yeah.
So Ayuk and Mike Williams kind of like trending in different directions. Maybe talk to me a little bit about what people should be doing with their Mike Williams rostered shares.
You know how we talked about Cup and being hurt? Like, Mike Williams is like, he should be Mike. I don't know. He's got to change his last name to something that's close to Williams, but about getting like something about wincing. You can come up with that. The dude, out of all the players I've ever seen play receiver, he gets up. He's shaken up more than just about anybody I've ever seen. So I love him being tied to Justin Herbert. Absolutely love it. The problem is he's oft injured. Now, it's kind of one of those things where he just gets banged up so often where he misses several series. He's not necessarily missing games. He's healthy enough to play games. It's kind of like Julio of past, where he didn't miss a whole ton of games, but he kept being limited in games, where he'd get hurt in the middle of a game and miss the rest of the game. And that's Mike Williams. But the fact that he's on pace for 1,600 or 1,700 and got 20 touchdowns is in the same mold.
1,720 touchdowns? My God.
Well, 1,700 yards and 20 touchdowns.
Oh, that would be mad.
That would be a big season. I don't think you should trade that. I look at this once again. You have a 27-year-old receiver that's banged up all the time, performing at an elite level. And I'm okay shifting equity to something else. Because at the end of the day, Mike Williams, even if you are a Mike Williams supporter, there's still doubt. No matter how big of a Mike Williams fan you are, there's still doubt. And as soon as he gets hurt, or as soon as the production stops, the insulation is just not there for Mike Williams.
Okay, so, I disagree. Do you want to know why?
Yeah.
So you know that I'm a little bit biased towards Mike Williams. I've been watching him a lot. I like him. The reason is, this is his 5th-year option. He's kind of auditioning for new contracts. This is like rhetoric stuff that we've been through a few times, so we don't really need to go too far into detail. But if you look back at the context of his injury history, they are kind of what you alluded to a little bit earlier. You said he's always banged up. So outside of there was a neck fracture, which is not banged up. That's an actual injury that you're going to miss time for. But he had like a hernia, a knee bruise, a lower back muscle spasm. So these are all injuries that he's missed time for, by the way. A shoulder AC joint sprain, a thigh hamstring strain, a lower back lumbar sprain. So like sprains, strains, and bruises.
It's like a movie. It's like playing Strains and Automobiles, but for injuries.
No, it's the Wizard of Oz instead of lions, tigers, and bears. It's the Wizard of Oz of injuries.
I like
sprains,
that.
Trains, yeah, sprains, strains, and bruises. And these are the types of things that players that are in the final year of a contract auditioning for a new team play through. He's probably already hurt with one of these things right now, but he's playing through the pain because he knows it's literally millions of dollars that are on the line for him right now. So I'm a little bit less concerned about him being banged up. He's going to play through these things. So
I don't know. I don't know about it. All I know is I would cash out on the production.
Yeah, that's what it looks like people are doing, to be honest. But
I'd give it one more week, see if he can replicate what he's been doing, and then go from there.
So, and here's my I've given you a reason why I'm less concerned about it, the injury at least. But my recommendation would be you can ride him as long as you want this season. I don't think there's going to be a huge concern with him going down with a lot of missed time on one of these
I would say it's
if he gets seriously injured, it's a problem. What?
I'd say it's a pretty big concern.
I'm just telling you, I'm less concerned about it based on what that's my angle. I think you can ride him as long as you want, but you absolutely must cash out on him at some point this season if you want max value. That's a big if. And the reason is he will probably be getting a contract on a team that needs a wide receiver next year, a la Corey Davis. And I could see him possibly becoming Andre Rison, fat and happy. He got his paycheck. He doesn't need to work as hard. He doesn't need to play through these, banged up things, kind of like he has done historically. But I think you absolutely must cash out at some point in the season. I'm not doing it in week three, though.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
All right. So that's Mike Williams. And then I didn't think you went too far into depth with Ayuk, did you?
No, we didn't touch Ayuk.
So what about Ayuk? So Mike Williams, I think we got some pretty clear takes.
Mm-hmm.
What's your recommendation for Ayuk? Like, he's kind of coming back on again.
Well, yeah, he finally got the snap share. So between weeks one and two, week three, he had that out combined. So I think he's out of the doghouse. He had a drop in the end zone, which not great. But man, you watch him play. You watch a little bit of that game. You watch him play. You see a damn good receiver when you watch him play. So I'm still in. I think if you can get him at your discount, you do it. You just gamble. You gamble on him staying out of the doghouse.
He gave you a 2-week window to buy him, and this is kind of like maybe a half of a 3rd-week window. Like he's hasn't done enough to maybe explode, but
and it's tough, dude, because there are things as dynasty players and GMs that we don't know. The intangibles. Like, we don't know what somebody's work ethic is. We don't understand that. We don't know what ails them. We don't know, like, DJ Chark, he came out with the depression stuff. Like, we don't know what these guys are going through outside of the field and what's causing certain things to happen, right? So there may be something far greater than what we're aware of with Brandon. He might have poor work ethic. He might, like you said, fat and happy, but he just might be fat and happy with his rookie paycheck. He was a first round pick. He probably got a pretty good contract. I don't know. But definitely a red flag with how the season has started. But I'm kind of banking on talent, but also historically I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. I will ignore the off the field red flags, whether it be suspensions, whether it be all this, if I find that somebody is talented. And it's bitten me before, several times.
Yeah.
But I love Ayuk. I just love watching him play, and I think he's a damn good football player, and just hope that the off-the-field stuff is more Shanahan expecting more, sending a message to a guy that he knows can be elite, as opposed to Brandon Ayuk just kind of pissing it away.
Yeah, it could be a good positive turning point in Ayuk's career to take it to the next level, some extra motivation. Let's hope that's what it is. I thought that this week was a pleasant surprise for him. I didn't think that he would get a crack at many more targets until like Debo or somebody else went down with an injury and like just an opportunity for him to get it back in there. But it was actually nice to see that it was not a forced choice for Shanahan to give Ayuk some targets. So it seems like he's kind of earning that trust back. So I like that. So that's Ayuk. We can move on to the next portion of the podcast. And this portion that I want the producer to kind of maybe put a little bit extra hours in on. And it's good. He's not listening. Yeah, he's listening. Shoot, I was hoping he would be ignorant to this. But maybe some sort of cool soundbite to announce some of these segments. I'll try my best with my voice. We'll call this something creative like the Dynasty Advice segment.
It's time now for Dynasty Advice.
Is that good?
No, I know you, so it's horrible, but I'm sure somebody might like it.
It's time for Dynasty Team Advice.
Okay, let's just go with it.
He's not going to do anything with it. It's just going to sound like my stupid voice. Izzy and I have a recommendation, something that you can put to action with your teams and maybe like try to get better. Here's mine. And I'm kind of like, I'm bouncing mine off of you, Izzy. I'm kind of curious to see what you think about this. So, and this kind of comes to fruition from just real life. My teams, like situations that are happening in my own teams. I've got one or two teams in my nine dynasty leagues where they're kind of middling, you know, like they're winning some, but I'm not super confident that they're going to go deep into the postseason for fantasy football. So I can either, you know, try to solidify my lineup and take a weak, frail attempt at getting into the playoffs and maybe trying to win third place money, or I can completely like flip now. And here's why I want to flip now. We're 3 weeks in. We're going into the fourth week. Around week 6 to 7 is the time when more teams in the league, in your league, tend to flip. So you're going to have competition, trade competition. Right now, you don't have that competition. Everybody feels like they can still make it. Like, oh, you know, I just had a bad start, or I had a middling start, but I can still make it. I like my team. Everybody loves their team in the preseason. Everybody still kind of likes their team in weeks 3 and 4. So if you can get ahead of that rush and start to like make some of those trades, you know, give your guys, you even have those teams that think they can make a push as your customer right now, along with the teams that are definitely contending, and you have less competition. So I think right now is a really good time to reevaluate your teams and find out if you really want to flip it or if you're a serious contender, if you're middling. So I think week 3 is a great time to flip before the rush comes. That's what I'm getting at.
Maybe. I mean, you can also look at it and say, well, you know, we got an extra week of the season, so that might extend, you know, from what we're used to saying, what you're used to recommending. And obviously, we've recommended this for the last 5 years in the pod. The quicker you are to bailing out on the season, the better you are long term.
Yeah. And I just think that this is your breaking point. This is the boiling point for that.
Yeah.
Starting next week, like a team, you know, teams that are going to be going 1-3, 0-4, those, they're going to join the party. And right now they're hopeful.
Yeah. So I actually have a different, I've implemented a different strategy that I've been trying for the first time ever. Instead of fully bailing on the season, what I want to do is I want to take running backs, because we always talk about, so when we're rebuilding a team, you want to dump your running backs because they have the most volatility in terms of value. What I'm going to now be doing for these teams that I was planning on contending and things didn't work out, I'm going to take my best running backs and I'm going to trade them for 1 year running back pieces plus. Let me give you an example. Let's say I have David Montgomery, or let's say I have Zeke, or let's say I have, who's another good example? I don't know. Let's use David Montgomery as an example. I'm going to try to take, when I'm ready to bail, I'm going to try to take David Montgomery. So if I'm sitting 0-3, 1-2 right now, I'm taking David Montgomery or one of the players in that range, one of the running backs in that range, and I'm trading him for like a Chase Edmonds plus or a James Robinson plus. And what it allows me to do is cash out on the running back, but still get running back production. And if my rest of my players, at the end of the day, one running back isn't going to win or lose you a championship if you can get 60 or 70% of his production somewhere else. That won't be the determining factor. So get that player and a pick on top of it, or another player for the future, like somebody that's injured, like trading David Montgomery and getting in a tight end premium league, getting Chase Edmonds and I don't know, like Irv Smith. Okay. Hypothetically, I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not saying that's the deal I would make, but I'm kind of giving you an idea. Or going after, if I have Zeke, trading Zeke for Jerry Jeudy and Chase Edmonds. Something in that pocket where I'm helping my team long term with Jeudy, but I'm still giving myself a chance with Chase Edmonds or James Robinson.
I like that. So you gotta come up with some sort of fancy name for that strategy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to try it this year.
I'm all about naming stuff, by the way.
Yeah, we got to come up with these names. You can't put me on the spot. I'm horrible. I'm not creative enough. So I rely on you for these things. Your dad joke extraordinaire, you know?
Yeah.
So that's going to be kind of my strategy. I'll let you know how it plays out as the weeks go on, because there are a couple of my teams where I'm ready to kind of like ready mail it in. They didn't perform how I was expecting. So now I'm going to try to do it.
How about the flip double dip? No, that's a no.
No, I'm out on that. Let me think. Now, write these two down. We got to come up with names for both of the things that you had talked about. We'll come up with it. The thing that I'm going to ask you now is, this might be the first time that I've ever played Dynasty where I legitimately don't know who my top three, like the top, if I went around and asked 50 people who their top three or top five Dynasty assets were, I'm going to get wild responses.
Wow. You're talking Superflex?
No,
it's easy in Superflex.
It's easy in Superflex, but I'm talking about one outside of the quarterbacks.
It does seem like, you remember last year, you kept doing Pittsburgh Steeler wide receiver polls, and Diontae Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Chase Claypool would always jostle for position based on their most recent performance. I kind of feel like that's what's happening with your top three right now outside of quarterbacks and Superflex. I would firmly put Justin Jefferson in there.
Okay, so let's talk about who were the top three before the season. So who are your top three before the season? I think most people, or what was the
Christian
consensus?
Christian McCaffrey, yeah.
McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor, maybe Barkley?
Yeah, Saquon may have stayed in there.
And maybe Tyreek Hill?
No.
He was up there.
Too fruity.
He was up there.
Too old, too fruity. Yeah, he was, but.
Cook?
A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf would be candidates.
A.J. Brown wasn't top three. But yeah, in that pocket. So now,
Kamara.
No, he was pretty. He was down there. So, is Christian McCaffrey in your top three?
I know that he should be.
You're doing a startup draft right now.
Let me answer your question by telling you what I tweeted about him the other day.
You did, okay.
I don't know if you saw this. Rostering Christian McCaffrey makes me sweat more than sitting in a Texas sauna in July.
Yeah. I agree with that. That's not where you want to be.
Yeah,
it's not.
It's a carton of eggs that I don't want to have all my eggs in. It's just, it scares the. Out of all the top three other top three candidates we've listed off, he makes me the most nervous to have all my eggs in that basket. So.
Okay, so you're out on McCaffrey in your top three, or is he in your? Top
I don't
three?
Want. Yeah, I really don't want okay. him to be in my.
Okay. Team,
yeah.
Okay. So he's out. So who are your top three?
Honestly, right now,
I can't answer this question. I have a very hard time answering this question.
So this moment, like I said, Justin Jefferson, I might put my faith in the young receivers. So like Justin Jefferson, like A.J. Brown, I don't even know about anymore, though. You know, he's back to being banged up again. D.K. Metcalf looks like a man. Tyler Lockett is currently banged up. I don't know how serious it was. It looked pretty bad on the field.
He came back. In that
game. That's good. That's good, but I mean, DK with Tyler, a healthy Tyler Lockett, had a very manly game, and he's very muscly. He's filled with muscles.
Big
I like
guy.
That. And like you said, DeAndre Swift, I don't mind having him somewhere up there. Barkley, not trusting the sustainability of Najee Harris's production, but I mean, it seems like we can trust in DeAndre Swift. So I'd say like Jefferson, DK Metcalf, DeAndre Swift, but I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, it's hard, and this could fluctuate pretty easily for you. Like, not just game to week to week. This is like quarter by quarter.
Yeah,
like
Najee and Saquon could both be in the conversation. You're right. It's
a weird time. It's a weird time in Dynasty.
Weird time to be alive.
I think my three. I'm kind of in your same pocket with the receivers. I'd probably just go A.J. Brown, JJ and Lamb, and be like, those are my top three, and we'll see what happens.
I forgot about Lamb. I like that.
And it's hard. I think Swift could sniff, but here's the thing. Who is the RB1? Who's the RB1 in Dynasty?
I mean,
is it
by default?
It can't be DeAndre. It's weird. It can't be DeAndre Swift. It's weird. It's hard to explain why it can't. It can, but it can't. So I put this.
It's by default Christian McCaffrey.
Is it though? I mean, you're looking at a guy that might be out 3 to 4 weeks at whatever age he is. I think he's 26 now.
Yeah, not until June 7th next year. So
he'll be 26 next year.
I think he's got enough insulation to be in there. Like DeAndre Swift could be banged up or have a couple bad games, and he would lose an incredibly large, more amount of value than Christian McCaffrey would when he's banged up. McCaffrey has shown that he's got some serious insulation.
Sure. Okay, so McCaffrey, who's two? Swift?
Barkley,
Swift. So those three?
I like that Barkley's kind of coming back from injury, you know, instead of what McCaffrey's going
into
doing.
Going into injury. Yeah. I mean, you can make a case for those guys.
Najee, if Juju stays out.
Yeah,
I mean,
Najee.
In the immediate future, yeah. That is weird. The running backs, it is a weird time for running backs right now. I agree. So weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Swift hasn't done enough to deserve being a running back one, but he's like kind of like, okay, nobody else is there.
He's the only young guy that's actually producing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I'll see how this develops over the next couple weeks.
I'm still trying to think of names for your strategy. The discount double flip.
It kind of is a discount double check in a way.
It is.
You're going for your discount, your discounted player, but you're double checking to see if you could maybe compete.
I like it. I like it. It's all we got. It's late. This is all we got, man. I'm usually a little bit more spry in the morning, but I got nothing left in the tank. No fuel left.
But you'll wake up at 4 a.m. and you'll write it down like you're writing a song.
But you know me, because that's exactly what I'll do. Yeah. And I'll jump on and record it quick so we can make the cut. Before we check out, you gave some good examples of your strategy, and I just want to give a couple for mine really quick. So like if I'm cashing out on this season, I'm targeting the obvious players like the J.K. Dobbins. I love getting injured players and kind of putting stock in next season, especially if you have your own picks. If you're in a league where you've kept them or you haven't given them away. So obviously like J.K. Dobbins, even Cam Akers should come back around some, maybe not to full value where he was pre-Achilles. I still like getting Travis Etienne. And I still like, there's another injured running back I'm not thinking of. Dobbins, Akers, Etienne. Is that it? Yeah, that's it. Dobbins, Akers, Etienne. I like that. So there hasn't been any real significant injuries outside those, has there?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Somebody down for the season. KJ Hamler, fine.
Irv.
KJ Hamler out for season. He's not one of them that I'm targeting.
Yeah. Irv Smith in tight end premium, I think, is a good target for a team that's rebuilding.
Yeah, there you go. So that's just a couple examples. So that kind of ends our
Dynasty Advice
segment. And that's kind of the podcast. Before we cut loose, I kind of feel like we should talk about something really sensitive really quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I just want to say that from a company standpoint, I speak for all of us. Our hearts and our thoughts go out to Mike Tagliere and family. Kind of a monster in the industry, you know, like I didn't know him personally. I don't have any, you know, really specific intimate examples of interactions with him. But I'm well aware of the impact that he had on our community and the industry, especially if you are listening and you're on Twitter. Everybody knows him, you know, everybody knows of him. And it seems like he's had a real positive impact throughout his career and stuff. And it's a pretty big loss for the community. So just wanted to say that we're very sad and our hearts go out to the family. We hope that they can find some peace in the situation. So do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I agree with you. I've never really had any communication with Mike in the past. But I found it very, I didn't tweet for a couple of days. I found it to be insensitive to carry on so quickly. Mm-hmm. You got to pay your respect. So I didn't tweet for a couple of days, yeah, just to kind of give the attention to his passing and pay the respects.
Yeah.
I dislike one thing about just kind of human nature in general is, God dang, we move on so fast from tragedy. Mm-hmm. It felt like Mike, with just massive amounts of pull in the industry and just kind of how big of a person he was in the industry, it felt like my timeline was Mike Tagliere for 12 hours, maybe a day. Let's give him a day. And then it was back to normal. And something about that just does not sit well with me.
Yeah, I agree.
But it's like, I don't know what else, I don't know what to do, but it just doesn't, I don't know, it's weird. It's a weird feeling. I put out my first tweet, and even as I was tweeting it, I was like, God, man, it's weird that I'm tweeting this. And you mentioned the same thing, because I texted you right after. I'm like, hey, it feels really weird tweeting. I feel like I should be waiting a little bit more. But
I did the same thing. I locked down all of Saturday, and then I still felt weird the next day, even like saying anything. So I was kind of sporadic, but I agree with you. It seems like, out of respect, I just wanted to be away from that, you know, just to honor the family and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's been a brutal year and a half for a lot of people. I feel fortunate and blessed so far that COVID is obviously it's affected everybody's lives, but it hasn't had a direct impact on my life and, you know, my close friends and family. You know, I've been blessed to not have to have dealt with it in that way. But many others can't say the same. So hopefully this is the last of the fallen soldiers that we have in this industry.
Yep. Until that time comes, we're going to finish the podcast off a little bit differently. Usually, you know, we talk about the website and following us on Twitter. We're just going to finish things off with a moment of silence out of respect for Mike and his family. Thank you for listening.
Wait, not enough bait. Frost on my opponents, gonna call cupcakes in. It's no hate, just facts. There's just no way I'm last. Technically, I'm last. 101 pick, I'm bad. Bad at the bone, ain't mad at the domain. Rather than know the anatomy, know a valuable rose is dandy to know the man. JPAZ, let's go, let's go, let's go.